Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. The Iowa Court of Appeals has upheld the termination of a Waterloo mother's rights to her one-year-old after the child was hospitalized for swallowing drain cleaner. Court records show a relative was skeptical of Kayla Lynn Tiefel's account that suggested the child's older sister had poured Drano on him while she was in the shower. The grandmother implied the mother was responsible for the injuries because her story didn't make sense, asking, why didn't the sibling get burned as well? Court records state. The grandmother said she also observed two bruises on the child's arm a few days earlier, according to court records. Tiefel was charged with child endangerment after police noticed the drain cleaner was stored without a safety cap and a test determined the child had been exposed to methamphetamine and THC. Court records also described the house as uninhabitable because it was filled with garbage. She pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 5 years in prison. In a ruling issued Wednesday, the Iowa Court of Appeals turned down Tiefel's challenge to the state termination of her parental rights. In the year and a half leading up to the time that Iowa Department of Health and Human Services became involved with the family, the mother admitted that she was using methamphetamine all day, every day, court records state. The Drano incident happened in January 2023, weeks after HHS became involved with the family. In appealing the termination, Tiefel said she had made progress through substance abuse and mental health counseling while behind bars. She also argued the state should have granted her more time because she was in prison. We acknowledge her incarceration and the no-contact order served as communication barriers during this case, but they did so because of the mother's own actions, the Court of Appeals ruling stated. It also noted she fully addressed the circumstances that ultimately led to the child's removal from the home. The termination appeal ruling didn't mention Tiefel and the children by name, but the facts and timeline match Tiefel's criminal case. The ruling also detailed the ordeal the child went through following the incident. While the child was in Iowa City Hospital in a very dire condition, the mother left the hospital because HHS workers requested she undergo a drug test, record state. When the child was in need of skin graft surgery, the hospital similarly struggled to contact the mother to obtain consent for the procedure, the ruling states. A juvenile court judge formally removed the child from the mother's custody so HHS workers could provide consent for the medical treatment, records state. The child spent time in the pediatric intensive care unit and underwent surgeries to keep his airway open. He was then transferred to the burn recovery unit for rehabilitation. 5 weeks later, he was released to a family member and needed a feeding tube. Records indicate he still faces regular laser surgeries and medical appointments to treat scarring. A Waterloo man has been arrested for attacking a female acquaintance and taking her cell phone last October. Matthew Ray McAaron, 31, had been arrested for second-degree robbery, but he pleaded to the lesser charge of first-degree theft and on April 5th was sentenced to up to 10 years in prison and ordered to pay restitution. Authorities said the victim was walking home on Ackerman Street around 10 p.m. October 26th when McAaron pulled up next to her, exited his vehicle, and knocked her down. He then punched her in the face and took her cell phone, cigars, cigarettes, and $3 in cash. Court records show McAaron also pleaded to misdemeanor assault while displaying a weapon and was sentenced to 180 days in jail, suspended to 7 days in jail for trying to run over a man in Exchange Park on October 27th. He crashed his vehicle chasing the man, according to court records. A Waterloo man has been arrested in connection with a March drug search that uncovered a child living in squalor. Police arrested Dontavius Antoine Jones, 24, on Monday on a warrant for child endangerment, a misdemeanor. According to court records, officers searched a home at 422 Dane Street where Jones was living with a one-year-old child, March 7th. Police found K2 synthetic marijuana, a digital scale, and other items. The home also had animal feces in most of the rooms, as well as trash bags piled up and drugs on the floor, according to court record. Jones wasn't charged with drug offenses in the search. He was also arrested for first-degree harassment for allegedly threatening to shoot a female acquaintance and shoot up her house on Monday. He was released pending trial. One person has been arrested for breaking into a Waterloo home early Wednesday. A woman called police around 2:20 a.m. after watching the suspect kick open the door to 709 Randolph Street and walk inside. When officers arrived, they found Brett Matthew Farmer, 29, in the area. Inside the home, they discovered the broken door and a bicycle that had been moved in an attempt to steal it, according to court records. Farmer, formerly of Waucoma, was arrested for third-degree burglary. Bond was set at $5,000. The burglary came months after Farmer was sentenced for an earlier break-in. He was found inside a home at 215 Boston Avenue on December 26th. He pleaded to a reduced charge of trespassing and on February 7th was sentenced to 45 days in jail. A woman has been charged in connection with dogs found living without food and water in a Waterloo mobile home. Laura Renee Wolf, 51, currently of Cedar Falls, was arrested Thursday for 10 counts of misdemeanor animal neglect. She remains free pending trial. According to court records, animal control workers and Waterloo police were called to 2828 Redwood Lane in the Gaslight Villa Mobile Home Park on February 23rd to check on the welfare of pets at the home following an eviction filing. Authorities found 10 dogs living at the address with no running water and no food. The floors were covered in feces, record states. A veterinarian who examined the dogs found urine and feces coating their fur, and all of the dogs tested positive for hookworms, whipworms, and Giardia parasites. New Hampton's police chief has resigned over $40. According to city officials, Chief Tim Peterson tendered his resignation after he allegedly pocketed $40 that had been left behind at a store self-checkout lane in March. The city council accepted the resignation following a closed-door executive session. While the city of New Hampton is undoubtedly disappointed by Chief Peterson's actions, we have been very pleased with his performance and the direction he has taken the police department, city officials said in a news release. Chief Peterson will be missed by the entire New Hampton community. Chief Peterson will suffer a harsh consequence for his decision, no other person would experience. However, law enforcement is held to a higher standard, and Chief Peterson recognized this and accepted responsibility and the consequences for his actions, the release states. According to city officials, Peterson was shopping March 29th when he noticed $40 in cash left in the checkout lane. He allegedly left with the money instead of turning it over to store staff. A short time later, the person who left the money contacted law enforcement. Peterson was then contacted by law enforcement and made aware the owner of the money had called the store about the forgotten money. Peterson immediately returned to the area and turned the money over to the officer handling the call for service so it could be returned to its rightful owner, according to the city. Clarksville woman has been arrested for allegedly breaking into a downtown Waterloo store on Monday night. Authorities allege Samantha Rebecca Fern Smith, 31, entered the Hoarder store 500 Sycamore Street around 7:45 p.m. and left with items from the shop. Officers arrived and found Smith in the area with a roller suitcase and carrying a backpack and a kitty litter box. Some of the items still had price tags, according to court records. Smith admitted taking property from the store, including the shirt she was wearing. She also told police she was trying to protect residents from heat in the building. White was arrested for third-degree burglary, and her bond was set at $5,000. The Waterloo City Council approved a more than $2 property tax rate increase on Monday following a discussion of possibly lowering the amount proposed. The council adopted the fiscal year 2025 budget, including a 13.65% boost to overall property tax collections in a 5-2 vote. At-large council member Steve Simon and Ward 2 council member Dave Beeson voted against it. The new tax rate, starting July 1st, will be $22.09 per $1,000 of taxable value, or $2.36 higher than the current rate of $19.73. Total property tax collections will rise $6.38 million to an estimated at $53.1 million for the new fiscal year. For the current fiscal year, the collections were estimated at $46.8 million. The city is expected to spend $329.7 million, but only bring in $298.4 million in revenues. Beeson said over the last 4 years, the city increased its tax askings by $4 million total. He, along with Simon, said the tax increases are going to be difficult for residents as well as commercial and industrial business owners. In hopes of offsetting some of the burden, Beeson put forth an amendment to the budget to use $1.5 million of American Rescue Plan Act funds to lower the new rate to $21.43, or 66 less than what was proposed. ARPA funds are federal money given to government entities to offset losses from the COVID-19 pandemic. The City Council has about $2 million left of unused ARPA funds. Some of the council members who voted against using the ARPA funds believe that money should be reserved for other projects. Bridget Wood, the city's finance director, said Mayor Quentin Hart discussed using a bulk of the money for new housing projects. Ward 4 council member Belinda Creighton-Smith noted that ARPA money could be used for projects in disadvantaged, economically depressed neighborhoods, and taking away $1.5 million from that pool of money could be taking it away from those residents. After the budget and increased tax askings were passed, Simon said when he was campaigning last year, most people complained about taxes. For a residence valued at $100,000, the homeowner can be expected to pay $1,024 annually. The owner of a commercial building valued at $500,000 would pay $8,494, and an industrial building valued at $1 million would pay $18,434. The state-determined rollback, the percentage of assessed value that is taxed, results in differences between various classifications of property. Residential property values are taxed at a percentage of 46.34%. Commercial and industrial properties are taxed at the residential rate for the first $150,000 and then at 90% for the remaining assessed value. A recent law change required counties to mail a statement to taxpayers with the numbers for proposed city, school district, and county budgets. However, the actual impact will likely be different them the examples in the statement because they do not factor in possible changes in assessed values. The average growth in assessed values for Black Hawk County effective with the new fiscal year is about 21%. The city represents only a portion of a property owner's tax bill, with the school district, county, and other taxing entities making up the rest. The majority of the city's budget is spent on public safety at 53.5%. Culture and recreation accounts for 16.2% of the budget, 15.4% is for general government, 8.9% is for public works, 5.5% is for community and economic development, and 0.5% is for health and social services. A vacant Rath packing plant building is on track to become senior housing after the City Council approved a developer to get the ball rolling. The council unanimously sold and conveyed the Rath Administration Building, 1515 Sycamore Street, for $1 to Gerhardt Moore Holdings, LLC, on Monday. It has been vacant since 1985, when the company went bankrupt. The former business office building for the meatpacking plant will become 87 affordable senior housing residential units. Charles Moore of Gerhardt Moore Holdings said he plans on a few studio apartments, 42 one-bedroom apartments, and 42 two-bedroom apartments, with a maximum estimated rent of $750, $813, and $976, respectively. The Colorado-based developer has successfully repurposed other abandoned and historical properties into apartments in Colorado and Kansas. Moore said in order for the project to come to fruition, his team will have to secure multiple tax credits. This includes low-income housing tax credits, state and federal historical tax credits, and a Grayfield site grant. Grayfield sites are areas of land occupied by outdated, abandoned, or unused commercial properties. The project needed an investment from the city as well. The developer will receive a $5,000 per unit infill incentive, resulting in a $1.3 million minimum assessed value. The money is coming from the city's Rath Tax Increment Financing District. Moore said if his company does not receive all of the funding it applies for, the project will be stalled. He said the tax credit applications are expected to be decided on this fall. If the developer receives the needed money, the building plans should be approved by January and construction would start that March. If all goes according to plan, the apartments should be available for rent in May of 2026. In other business, the council voted 5-2 against a request to hire another construction inspector for Waterloo Fiber's Fiber to the Premise and Backbone Network project. Those opposed said the cost was too high. Council members Ray Foose and Rob Nichols voted for the additional position. In Trust Solutions Group, formerly known as Magellan, made the request for the boring construction crews. There are currently 7 crews, and the contract agreement states there should be 1 inspector for every 4 crews. Inspectors are paid $21,400 per month or $256,800 a year, as well as given an additional $2,000 per month for travel expenses. The Cedar Falls City Council adopted the fiscal year 2025 budget in a 6-1 vote on Monday and expects to collect 8.66% more in property taxes. Council member Darrell Cruz dissented, wanting to investigate more cuts. There was little debate on the $114 million budget, which increases tax collections from $23.78 million to $25.84 million after discussions at many previous meetings. But council members shared their thoughts on the process and final product effective July 1st. Among the comments voiced were how few constituents they heard from on the budget. The discussion also included council members' attempt to repeal one of two minor amendments made earlier this month. In the end, though, most were pleased with the outcome. I think in particular that grant writing position is instrumental for us moving forward, said Council Member Chris Latta in reference to a new policy specialist the city will hire. The budget also adds a second school resource officer. Finance and Business Operations Director Jennifer Rodenbeck has previously attributed the increase in tax askings to new positions as well as regular increases in salaries and health insurance. The city has 328.79 full-time equivalent employees. The budget also supports many projects. They're detailed in the city's capital improvements program and its five-year outlook. Among them are ongoing projects like the reconstruction of Main Street. Additionally, funds are set aside for possible zoning changes in the College Hill area and a fundraising feasibility study on rebuilding the Hearst Center. Funds also will go to the Cedar Falls Community School District's new swimming facility and roads around Bess Streeter Aldrich Elementary School, the potential expansion of the Big Woods Campground, and removal of the railroad tracks that go through downtown may receive funding as well. University of Northern Iowa officials were in attendance on Monday. Following the vote, they issued a statement along with Mayor Danny Laudick and other city officials to point out the $3 million pledged by Cedar Falls over 3 years for significant Unidome renovations. They also highlighted the expected benefits to local economy and area tourism. The council agreed originally to a $2.5 million contribution, but when three new council members came on board after the November election, the council decided to give an additional $500,000 for a total of $3 million. You and I originally asked for $5 million. Officials point out that Cedar Falls has one of the leaner operations among the state's largest cities. However, property owners should expect to see the city's portion of their tax bills go up. After factoring in an average increase in property valuations of 20% and an 8.31% drop in the state's residential rollback, or how much of a property's value can be taxed, the city's estimates a homeowner's taxes will rise approximately 5.86%. The property tax rate landed at $11.86 per $1,000 of taxable valuation versus the $11.40 in this year's budget. In addition to voting against the budget, Cruz feels there's a lack of transparency on the income side. Laudick and Rodenbeck deflected Cruz's assertions while providing explanation for how the money is used. Also in question is how general fund savings are spent. Rodenbeck says the excess dollars largely come from budgeted positions, typically in engineering and public safety, going unfilled. The council has directed in the past that those funds be spent covering health insurance losses and capital projects, though some people have been skeptical about whether that's the full story. City staff members have disagreed. In this case, $100,000 in general fund savings was among the focus of two amendments made at meetings earlier this month. A majority of council members supported reducing the tax rate rather than using it for a potential capital project. Council member Aaron Haubacher expressed a hesitancy for using savings for tax relief. Council Member Kelly Dunn motioned to reinstate the $100,000 for use in the budget, bringing the rate back to $11.91. She advocated for keeping up with past practice, but received immediate pushback from Council Member Dustin Ganfield. "I would request we remove that motion," he said. Ganfield and others noted the council met in committee earlier this month to reach consensus and avoid amendments on the fly. Although the vote on the motion didn't go Dunn's way, she heard some support voiced. Ganfield also noted wanting to trim the budget of extras in the future for those struggling economically, though that didn't impact his vote. Councilmember Hannah Christman expressed gratitude for city staff. The Cedar Falls City Council voted Monday to double the number of pickleball courts in Orchard Hill Park from 8 to 16, despite objections from neighbors. A small group of residents from Primrose and Mary Hill Drives fought the proposed expansion along a McLean Drive entrance into the park behind their homes. The courts will be constructed where dilapidated tennis courts once stood on the west side of the park to help meet increased demand from enthusiasts of the popular sport. We have so many discussions about parks because people want access in their neighborhoods to parks, said Council Member Kelly Dunn. So I can respect the want of not in my backyard, but I also want kids and everyone to be able to have access to these parks. Council Member Dustin Ganfield dissented, citing the cost and the neighbors' objections. He suggested a noise study and encouraged the Parks Department to follow through on promises to try to reduce any nuisance. The cost is estimated at $489,469, of which $200,000 is expected to come from a Cedar Falls Pickleball Club fundraising campaign. A vote on a construction contract is expected next month. Work could begin as early as June and potentially wrap up before the start of classes in August at nearby Orchard Hill Elementary School. Plans also call for expanding the outdated parking lot and widening the drive to allow for more vehicles and two-way traffic. Stormwater management infrastructure will be installed as well, because none currently exists. Four protesters cited traffic concerns and worries about noise caused by the ball hitting the ground and paddle. Kathy Oakland, one of the residents, said one way to solve the problem is with careful city planning. There was an informational meeting last summer, but our concerns have not been discussed for over a year. We did not call the plans improvements. Recreation and Community Programs Manager Mike Soppy noted plans to put up dense trees or fencing to reduce noise. Two members of the Cedar Falls Pickleball Club also supported moving forward. The club has long advocated more courts and improvements at the park. In September, the council approved a contract to build a new shelter between the current and future courts at a base price of $28,672. The Monday vote appeared as if it might be closer until Soppy described the planning and discussions that have transpired over 2 years. Council Member Gil Schultz was initially against the new courts, tapping his pen to simulate the sound of the bothersome ball bouncing, but he ultimately voted in favor, citing the history of the project and hopes efforts will be made to mitigate neighbors' concerns. One resident, Lori Newbro, asked why courts couldn't be built further away from homes. She pointed to the Cedar Valley Soccer Complex off Ridgeway Avenue in Waterloo as an example. Protesters also had concerns about property values decreasing, along with worries about lighting being added in the future. Soppy said no plans for lights exist. Council Member Hannah Christman backed expanding the courts because fundraising already is underway. She sympathized with volunteers who have spent lots of time on the effort. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, April 18, 2024 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. In more Cedar Falls news, The City of Cedar Falls will provide $3 million to support the University of Northern Iowa's comprehensive renovation to the Unidome. The City Council on Monday night approved its fiscal year 25 budget, which includes $1.25 million for the project. An additional $1.75 million is expected to be paid the following 2 years. City officials noted the Unidome is not only an iconic landmark for Cedar Falls, but a vital large event space that contributes to the local economy. As a community, our partnership with UNI over the last 150 years has helped make Cedar Falls one of the best places in the country to call home and raise our families, said Mayor Danny Laudick. Continuing that legacy of partnership, the city is excited to support the renovation of the Unidome as part of our Tomorrow campaign. More than just a sports facility, the Unidome has long been one of the biggest tourism draws and host to some of the biggest events in the Cedar Valley since it was built almost 50 years ago. Since opening its doors in 1976, the Unidome has become synonymous with the University of Northern Iowa and the Cedar Valley. Economic data gathered by UNI Athletics shows more than 500,000 people visit the Unidome each year, resulting in an annual economic impact of more than $17 million. Annually, more than 200,000 visitors come from outside of Black Hawk County. In addition to UNI athletic events, the Dome is home to the Iowa High School football playoffs, farm shows, travel and vacation shows, concerts by nationally known musical acts, and a variety of other events. Just last month, the Unidome played host to more than 2,000 youths from across the state and nation for the annual Regional Robotics Competition and Cedar Valley STEM Festival. The Dome also welcomed thousands of families during Easter weekend, serving as the venue for an annual egg hunt. The Unidome has been the site of hundreds of iconic events over its 50-year lifespan, said UNI Interim Director of Athletics Bob Bowlesby. The venue continues to be a beacon that has attracted visitors to Cedar Falls and the Cedar Valley. We are grateful for the support of the citizens of Cedar Falls, as well as Mayor Laudick and the Cedar Falls City Council. With this support, we can all look forward to a bright and vibrant future for the Unidome. The $50 million Unidome renovation project is a part of UNI's $300 million Our Tomorrow campaign. The $20 million phase one of the renovation will continue in May as the process to replace the center portion of the Unidome's nearly 25-year-old fabric roof will begin. We now take a look at today's obituaries. Vivian Chestnut, 75, of Waverly, Iowa, passed away April 13th. Funeral celebration services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, April 19th, at Heritage Global Methodist Church. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 18th, at Kaiser Corson Funeral Home of Waverly. The burial will be in Harlington Cemetery. Barbara C., 93, of Trier, passed away on April 14th. As per her wishes, no services will be held. Joanne Funk, 94, of Winthrop, died Sunday afternoon, April 14th, at Prairie Hills Assisted Living in Independence. The funeral service will be at 3 p.m. on Saturday, April 20th, at the Church of Christ United, Winthrop. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, April 19th, at Fawcett Schmidt's Funeral Home in Winthrop, and for 1 hour prior the service on Saturday at the church. Interment will be at a later date in German Burial Ground, Bennington Township, near Denver. Joanne Sue Rose was born in Sterling, Illinois on December 1, 1929. She graduated from Morrison, Illinois High School in 1947. On September 18, 1949, she was married to Melvin Funk in Morrison, Illinois. Melvin was a lifelong dairy farmer, and they farmed near Dunkerton until 1965. They then purchased and lived on a dairy farm near Winthrop. Melvin passed away in 2012, and Joanne continued to live at the farm until 2019, when she moved to Prairie Hills. Joanne took great pride in being a farm wife and raising their six children. She was a 4-H leader for many years and enjoyed watching her kids show their Ayrshire and Holstein cattle at local, state, and national shows. Joanne was an active member of the Church of Christ United in Winthrop throughout her life. She was a proud member of the church's bell choir and edited the church newsletter. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the Church of Christ in Winthrop or the German Burial Ground Association in Waterloo. Elaine Goldsberry, 90, of Waterloo, passed away Sunday, April 14th at Pinnacle Specialty Care in Cedar Falls. She was born December 14, 1933, in Olwine. She married Fred Goldsberry on April 18, 1953, in Fairbank. He preceded her in death on February 23, 2014. Elaine worked as a bookkeeper at the Peterson Hill Insurance Company in Cedar Falls with her daughter. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 19th at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. Public visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 18th at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup on West Ridgeway. Memorials may be directed to the family. Eugene A. Matthews, 91, of Waterloo, passed away on Tuesday, April 16th at Unity Point Hospital in Waterloo. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 20th at Lock Garden View Chapel, with a visitation 1 hour prior. Burial following at Garden of Memories Cemetery in Waterloo with military honors. Charles Kent Shepherd, 84, of Waterloo, died Monday, April 15th at Sartori Memorial Hospital. Services are at 11 a.m. on Friday, April 19th at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway, with burial at Garden of Memories Cemetery. Full military rites at the grave by the Evansdale AMVETS Post 19, assisted by the Naval Honor Guard. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service on Friday at the funeral home. Barbara Toussaint Mercedes, 90, of Sumner, passed away peacefully on April 14th in Sumner. A private family service will be held. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 17th at Becker and Son Funeral Home in Sumner. Barbara was born on December 17, 1933, in Sumner. She grew up in Sumner and graduated from Sumner High School in 1951. After high school, she was employed by the First National Bank of Sumner until her marriage. Barbara was united in marriage with Vern Toussaint on January 27, 1953, at the Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Sumner. Barbara and Vern farmed west of Sumner for many years until they retired from farming in 1981. She was a member of the Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Sumner. And in the high school sports roundup, in girls soccer, Cedar Falls, 1 point. Number 4, Ankeny, no points. Alexis Montgomery made 17 saves, and Ella Eubin tallied a second-half goal as the Tigers upset the Hawks. Montgomery's biggest save came with 11 minutes left on a penalty kick after Cedar Falls gave up a handball in the box. Eubin scored on a 15-yard shot out of the penalty box with 3 minutes left for the game winner. Denver 4, Columbus Catholic 0. Four different Cyclones scored as Denver improved to 7-1. The Cyclones got goals from Elena Akers, Emily Mueller, and Grace Mullahan. Marshalltown 2, Waterloo West 1. Lisa Ann Blessing scored in the first half for the Wahawks. Goalkeeper Hannah Daniel had 12 saves in the game. In boys tennis, the Sailors topped the Wahawks. Columbus Catholic topped Waterloo West 6-3 Monday at West. The Sailors won 5 of 6 single matches. Parker Stroh opened the meet with a 6-4, 6-1 win over Connor Hoothurst, and West's Ben Young tied it with a 6-1, 6-0 win over Patrick Underwood. But Columbus followed with wins from Bryce Nolan, Drew Schultz, Ryan Weber, and Rudy Lind. Hoothurst and Young topped Stroh and Underwood at number one doubles, and West also got a win from Eli Johnson and Jackson Chidester at number three over Weber and Lind. In girls' golf, West came in second at quad. Freshman Bree Stegall was third overall as the Wahawks took second behind Linmar Monday at Irv Warren Memorial. Stegall carded a 43 and finished behind a pair of Linmar golfers, Morgan Rupp, 41, and Nina McCure, 42, in the individual race. Linmar won with a score of 173. West was second with 188, with Dubuque Senior 196 and Iowa City West 207. West's Olivia Whitmer, 47, and Ellen Whitmer, 48, also scored rounds in the 40s. Cedar Falls came in third in the quad. Molly Ratchford carded a 37 as she was one of three golfers to shoot one over Monday at Pheasant Ridge. Ratchford finished as runner-up medalist on a card back to Cedar Rapids, Washington's Lily Bell Barker, and Washington's Jane Peterson was third. The Warriors won the quad with a score of 155. Western Dubuque was second at 165, and Cedar Falls carded a 171. Iowa City High was fourth at 190. Cedar Falls' Haley Jacobs shot a solid round of 41, in addition to Ratchford's 37. In boys' golf, Max Schumann and Camden Brendan each carded 38s as the Sailors topped Starmont and Springville on Monday to improve to 16-2. The Waverly Shell Rock girls track and field coach, Jason Milkey, saw something different with senior high jumper Ramey Dahlquist when the indoor season started. He saw an athlete that dedicated herself to getting stronger in her leg strength. Dahlquist's early indoor results saw her hit the 5 feet mark easily, and then a clearance at 5-2 came. Monday, 4 days before the Drake Relays cutoff, Milkey pushed Dahlquist to do something she hadn't done before, clear 5 feet, 3.5 inches. With the Cedar Falls Tiger Invitational high jump title already in her back pocket after she cleared 5 feet, Dahlquist and Milkey jointly decided to bypass 5-2 and go for the personal record. Dahlquist grazed and knocked the bar down on her first attempt at 5.3.5. Then, after taking a moment to clear her mind, she soared over it on her second attempt. The mark of 5.3.5 has an even larger significance. Now, Dahlquist, whose older sister Reagan was a four-time Drake Relays qualifier and multiple-time state medalist, has put herself in position to earn her first trip to Drake as part of the high jump field. Dahlquist, who also anchored the Gohawks' winning distance medley relay team Monday, as well as running second in the 400 hurdles, will aim to clear 5-4, potentially Thursday, at the Wahawk Invitational in Waterloo at Memorial Stadium. The blue standard for Drake is 5-6, and current cutoff is 5.3.5, but a clearing of 5-4 would lock down a trip to Des Moines. Cedar Falls Tiger senior Paige Paulp was part of three titles for Cedar Falls Monday as the host won their meet easily with 233 points. Paulp anchored both the winning shuttle hurdle relay team and 4x100 teams and captured the 100 hurdles. The shuttle team, which also includes Lauren Wasco, Sophia Tugnetti, Addie Speyer, set a new season best with a time of 1 minute, 4 seconds, and 83, which hit the blue standard for the Drake relays and qualified that team to Drake for the third straight season. The Tigers team ranks 5th in the state and is just 0.61 seconds behind state leader Waukee. Pulp appears to be hitting her stride in the hurdles, as last Friday she hummed to a 15.23 second clocking in the 100 hurdles, the third fastest time in the state and a Drake Relays automatic qualifying time. Cedar Falls will also race at the Wahawk Invitational Thursday, as the Tigers will try to lower multiple times for additional Drake Relays qualifying spots. Monday, the 4x400 team of Josie Simonson, Grace Knutson, Grace Hannum, and Kaylin Kearns also hit the blue standard with a 4 minute 3 second.52 clocking. The City of Cedar Falls is looking for name ideas from the community for the new Cedar River Recreational Area. Until Friday, the public can go online to bit.ly/namecr to propose a name for consideration. The cornerstone of Cedar River Recreational Improvement Project has truly been creating a bright and active future for our community and the people that came together to make this opportunity possible, said Amanda Huseman, the city's communication specialist. It seems only fitting that we celebrate the launch of this new chapter by inviting our citizens to help name it. According to the city, the new feature is being constructed between the Main and First Street bridges and adjacent to the downtown district, helping unite Peter Melende Park on the south side of the river with Gateway Park on the north side. The new attraction improves river safety and accessibility, enhances aquatic life, and provides a variety of recreational opportunities, including kayaking, canoeing, fishing holes for anglers, and paddling. Education and historic preservation are integral to the project, as the River Art Plaza is added to Gateway Park, detailing the importance of the Cedar River to the expansion of the city and the river's vital role in the ecological and historic development of the watershed. The south side of the river includes the new Turtleback Landing, where water enthusiasts can park their watercraft and explore the area. To learn more about the project or donate, visit bit.ly/CF Cedar River Project. A downy feathered great horned owlet was recently rescued and returned to its nest with a little help from some friends. Last week, a man walking his dogs in an area behind the Unidome spied an owlet beneath a stand of evergreen trees. The baby bird had apparently fallen out of the nest or off a tree branch. Concerned, the Good Samaritan contacted the Black Hawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project. Longtime volunteer and DNR-licensed wildlife rehabber Therese Evans answered the call. Great horned owlets are about the size of newborn chickens at hatching, according to BirdNote. They are brooded day and night by their mother for several weeks until the adult owls feel it is safe to resume nighttime hunting. Young remain in the nest for about 6 weeks before venturing out and climbing onto nearby branches. At 7 weeks, the owlets are taking short flights and within a few more weeks are fully fledged. This owlet appeared too small to be a brancher, Evans said, but in any case was in good condition. The next step was to find a way to return it to the nest 35 to 40 feet above the ground. Initially, Evans thought about asking Cedar Falls firefighters to help out with a ladder truck, but University of Northern Iowa's facilities management workers were willing to assist with the return. Jonathan Butler, Assistant Director for Campus Services at UNI Facilities Management, said everything happened so quickly. Time was of the essence, after Therese explained that the owlet's best chance of survival was to get it back up near its nest, because the owl's presumed mother was there the night before looking for the owlet. We were 48 hours into it at that point, and she explained that by 72 hours, the parents can leave the nest and don't come back. We needed to get the owlet up near its nest before nightfall. Butler recruited UNI arborist Greg Vanderholt to climb into UNI's 45-foot bucket truck and lift the baby back into the nest. Vanderholt was happy to help, first taking the lift up to the nest to look for additional owlets. There were no babies in the nest, but the nest appeared unstable. Great horned owls aren't the best nest builders. They tend to take over old squirrel nests or other empty nests, Evans said. Nestled into a wicker basket, the wide-eyed owlet was unperturbed by its high ride as the lift carried it up into the tree. There, the baby was tucked in with a few extra mice to keep its belly full until its mother returned. Several adult owls were spotted in the vicinity, and eventually two heads were spotted in the nest. Mom had returned. Later, the downy owlet was seen perched on a branch. Spring is the prime season for finding orphaned and injured wild animals and baby birds that have fallen out of nests, Evans said. It's not uncommon at this time of year, but it's important to know what to do in that situation, she explained. Avoid handling the animal, particularly if it is injured. If you must move the animal to safety, handle it as little as possible and place it in a safe, ventilated container in a warm, dark place. Do not feed or water the animal. Then contact the Black Hawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project at 319-277-6511. The wildlife group has a small budget to cover feeding animals, veterinarian care, medical supplies, medication, and caging supplies. No funding is provided at the state, local, or federal level. There is no paid staff. It is all volunteer. To make a donation to support their efforts, go to PayPal at bhwrpiowa@gmail.com or send a check to Black Hawk Wildlife Rehabilitation Project, care of Therese Evans, 6234 Heath Street in Waterloo, 50703. North Cedar residents now have a nearby store carrying fresh produce for the first time in years. Dollar General announced Monday that within the last few weeks, a complete remodel wrapped up and transition was made to selling fruits and vegetables at its store at 2921 Center Street. The remodel updated one of Dollar General's older stores. As a result, the company says the experience for shoppers will improve. The store has doubled the size of the freezer and cooler section. It now spans the entire west wall of the store. The company's decision to sell produce at the store, which opened in 2013, was driven by the lack of fresh fruits and vegetables available in the area. While Dollar General is not a grocer, we understand the affordable access our stores provide to customers, often in communities where other retailers cannot or will not serve, said the company in a statement. Early this year, Dollar General surpassed 5,000 stores nationwide offering fruits and vegetables, and more than 5,400 stores now sell produce. Customers will find everything from grapes, apples, lemons, and bananas to lettuce, carrots, celery, peppers, avocados, potatoes, onions, and tomatoes. Offerings will change based on the season. A news release notes the store offers more than 20 produce items typically sold in traditional grocery stores and covers approximately 80% of produce categories most grocery stores carry. Carla Ward, who lives locally, says she prefers to pick up her paper and cleaning supplies at Dollar General and has been a customer since the door opened. It's been a godsend. For me, it's the closeness, but it's the great people we've gotten to know. They've always met our needs, and we can count on them. The prices and coupons also were touted by customers who walked through Dollar General's doors this week. One indicated an underrated cheap product is the chocolate-covered raisins. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.